You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation.
It's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most diehard Georgia fans in the country.
Here are your hosts,
Tyler and Curtis.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast. I'm Tyler, and once again today I am joined by my co-host Curtis. And today we are emptying out the Week 10 mailbag as we answer all of your pressing Georgia football questions. And of course, you guys loaded us up with another stack of terrific questions. And once again, we got so many that there is just simply no way that we can cover all of them unless we had, I don't know, about 3 hours to record today, which we do not have on a holiday week. So that means we won't be able to get to all of them today. But we have the list, and we're going to get through as many of them as we possibly can. And the ones that we don't get to, we'll try to work them in later on this week, if at all possible. And I know a lot of you sent in multiple questions, and that is awesome. We appreciate and welcome that. That's what we're here for, right? But in the interest of fairness, we are going to try to spread the love around as much as we possibly can. So if we don't get to all of your questions, or maybe we use someone else's question on a related topic, please just understand that's why. I promise you we are not playing favorites. We love all of you guys, and we just want to make sure that as many people get a voice on this show as possible. But anyway, let's not waste any more time. Let's dig right into these questions. And who would have thought we have some quarterback questions to start us off yet again today. So we're going to start with our friend Cliff, who asked Curtis, if it means that JT Daniels comes back, since he's only getting so much exposure this late in the season and is not fully 100%, is this a blessing in disguise? It's not ideal to think of Brock Vandegrift starting week one against Clemson next year for sure. Could next year be, in all caps, the year? What do you think, Curtis?
I'm actually with Cliff. Like, even if he's not 100%, you wanted to get him out there and just see what he can do, because you also don't want to leave a bad taste in his mouth. I think that's a big thing that you don't want to have happen, is him kind of be like, why haven't I been given a chance? You know, even me not 100% maybe better than what we have. Whatever his reasoning is, I think that it's in our favor to at least get him out there. And I agree. I was very nervous. You and I have talked about it. If we didn't get a grad transfer going into week one against Clemson with whoever we had on the roster at the time, or Brock, is a little scary, I'll be honest. And so with the idea that JT may come back after getting some playing time like this, it definitely is. It makes you feel a lot better going into that game with the idea that, hey, we may have some experience coming back. I'm definitely on that board. And I think we will be really young defensively next year, or at least at certain positions. But I will say, I think that offensively, we will be pretty stacked, which makes me excited. I'm thinking of the receivers coming back, who we will have along those lines. And if anything's going to be young, I can live with a young defense, because honestly, I mean, we've had trouble at times this year. But if anyone's going to be young, I will say I have trust in Kirby and them to get the defense going next year. So I will say that I'm encouraged by what we could see next year.
We're talking about the youth on defense, and you're right. We're probably going to have some youth on defense. We actually have a question about that later on today. But like, we've spent all season, at least since the Alabama game, talking about how defense doesn't win championships anymore. It's all about the offense. So if we have the offense in place next year with the quarterback and really talented receivers that have begun to grow up, we get some guys coming back like Dominic Blaylock. You get Rosemead Jack Saint coming back. get some new guys added into the equation. You've got an offensive line that's continuing to grow and gel. A lot of those guys will be back next year. We'll miss Cleveland and Schaefer. Those guys will be gone, but we have a lot of guys way in the wings, really talented players ready to step up in there. We've got talented running backs go along with that offensive line, guys who I think their best football is still ahead of them. So the offensive pieces will be there in an era where you win championships with elite offensive play.
And yes, even defensively, you'll have a lot of talent too, because you'll have people like Keely Ringo ready to go, who I think at this point in time, if he's healthy, still will probably be one of our best DBs on the field if he was to get out there, especially in the star position compared to what we've thrown out there. So I think that there is a lot of talent out there that can do it. But like we said too, offense can bail you out, and I think we have the potential to have an offense next year that could bail out a young defense, especially early in the season.
Yeah, I'm with you here, and I'm with you as well, Cliff. I'm not saying that if JT Daniels did not get a chance to start the end of this season, like, you know, after the Florida game, moving off, if he never got a chance to start this season, I'm not saying that, like, yeah, go ahead and book it, he's going to be in the transfer portal, because he's already transferred once and used up that immediate eligibility waiver, that hardship waiver. So there's a good chance he might not be allowed to transfer penalty free again after he's already done it once. And maybe they would have granted it, because I think next year everyone's going to be granted that one-time transfer penalty free rule, but he's already kind of transfer penalty free. So I don't know if he would have transferred. I'm not saying he would have, but I think there is a chance that he would have transferred if he did not get a chance to show what he could do here in Athens this season with all the quarterback issues that we've had. And that's not something I want to go into this offseason even remotely thinking about, because if that was the case and we had to rely on a true freshman, Brock Vandegrift, maybe Dwan Mathis, maybe Stetson Bennigan, maybe Carson Beck, even though we haven't really seen anything out of him yet.
I don't want to hear the narrative either.
Yeah, absolutely. The narrative that we're always going to hear that Kirby can't handle quarterbacks until we find a quarterback that's the answer and shuts that up forever. And I honestly don't know if it'll ever shut up forever because of the whole Justin Fields thing. I don't know if it'll ever shut up unless, like, you have JT Daniels goes and wins a Heisman and wins a national championship. Maybe then. I don't know. I just don't know if that's ever going to go away, at least not anytime soon. But the narrative, like, it would be like times infinity if JT Daniels transfers out because we didn't give him a chance to show what he could do this year. And just, you don't want to hear that noise, that negativity. It just, that stuff can start to consume a program. You just don't want to hear that any more than we're already going to hear it. So that's certainly is something you don't want to hear about. But like, I mean, think about Curtis. Like, if we're going to next year with, okay, we probably will get a grad transfer. Who is that going to be? And then you have Beck, Mathis, Bennett, and then Brock Vandegrift. Like, I don't feel any better about that situation than I did this year. Maybe if Vandegrift is that rare freshman, and it is becoming more common, but still, I would say it's a rare occurrence that a freshman can come in at the quarterback position and be an immediate impact type of guy.
Even if JT didn't transfer and came back, his first game in over 2 years would be against Clemson, game one. Like, that's still not a situation you want your guy's first start in multiple years to be against.
And you don't have – and he wouldn't have the offseason being like the guy. He would still be in a quarterback competition. And Kirby will always say it's our competition, but I thought it was very telling. And Kirby has – the messaging has not always been good for Kirby Smart, especially with the quarterback that situation. He's not always handled that well, that PR. I think that's been a shortcoming of his. I think he's an incredible coach and done great things for us. I do think that's been a shortcoming of his. But one thing I was glad to hear him say when he was asked – at the end of the press conference, the post-game press conference on Saturday night, it was like, is it fair to assume that JT Daniels is your guy moving forward? He's like, is your starter moving forward? And he was like, yeah, it's safe to assume that. So
he was very blunt. That's one of the first times, even all the times through Fromm and Eason and Fields, it was a week by week thing. No, this was, yeah, he's our guy more. Like, yeah, it's safe to assume.
And that shocked me. Like, the way, just how straightforward he was there. And there was, because he's very secret squirrel, very Nick Saban-esque about a lot of this
stuff.
Well,
he doesn't want to give you, he wants to make you have to prepare for everything. And if you don't straight up know who everyone is, it's something else you have to prepare for.
Absolutely. So I was encouraged, shocked, surprised, all those things in one. But I think that's a really good sign if JT can continue to move forward this year. Now, he's not going to throw for 400 yards every game, but if he can continue to kind of move forward, progress with his knee, and play well the rest of the way, I think he's going to be our presumptive starter going to next year, and that's going to really help him build confidence in the rest of the team and just be that leader, the guy that everyone's going to rally around.
Yeah, because you need a quarterback that's the leader of your team, the one that everyone believes in, that gets your team going, and now he has the chance to do that. Like, I mean, even if he's a starter the rest of the year, Kirby's the type of guy that'll be like, hey, it's a competition. But the fact is the team will know, hey, this is our guy.
Yeah, the internal dynamics are just different. You're right. The team would know. I think this could be a blessing in disguise, getting him out there. And I mean, I don't think it's in disguise. I mean, it's just a pure blessing that he is now our starter and he's played as well as he did. I know small sample size, but played as well as he did in that small sample size. Again, like I said on the recap show earlier in the week, statistically, not a great defense, but statistically the best defense that we have played all year. I know they were somewhat shorthanded. That's still a good defense. And to play that well. Well,
he came out and did it too after our offense has been abysmal the last two games. So just to see some positivity, doesn't matter who. I mean, that was the big thing. It's just doing something positive. I mean, yeah, we couldn't absolutely. Even do it against someone like Florida.
Sure, absolutely. So and the last part of that question, Cliff, before we move on here, could next year be the year? Well, I'm a college football fan. So by definition, I always think next year is the year. That's what college football fans do. But yeah, I don't know, man. I'm hesitant to say next year can be the year because I've thought each of the past couple of years could be the year and something always one thing, at least one thing that ends up kind of holding us back. But I think if Daniels can continue to improve his health and his mobility and just plays well moving forward the rest of this season and everything goes as planned throughout the offseason, we don't have any major injuries or issues like that, I think next year we can be pretty good. I think our offense next year, if Daniels is the guy next year and plays anywhere close to the way he played, how he played against Mississippi State, I think the offense next year will be the best offense that we've had under Kirby Smart. I think that's saying something. Defensively, like we'll get to that a little bit later, but I still think we have a lot of talent defensively, and I think we'll have a chance. We'll have a chance playing Clemson week one. That's tough out of the gate, but I think we'll have a shot. I think we'll be better than Florida, and if we win the SEC East, and there's no Alabama on the schedule next year, I think we'll have a chance there to make a run. I think there's always that chance. There's always that chance for Kirby Smart. I mean, say what you want about Kirby and how he's handled quarterbacks. That's fair. But except for this year, and even almost this year, but I guess with the exception of this year, he's really given us a chance the past 3 or 4 years to be in a conversation for a college football playoff spot. I mean, we've been right there. So he's had us there. And I think I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. I don't. And real quickly, this thought just popped into my mind. And I actually think this is where Cliff was going with the question, but this kind of just popped my mind as I'm sitting here thinking about this. Yeah, another aspect of the whole JT Daniels health situation, the injury situation, not being ready to play, at least not getting his first opportunity until late in the season, not being healthy all year long. A big reason why that could ultimately end up being a blessing in disguise is the fact that let's say he had started all year, and he plays really well, like as well as he played, or close to the level he played against Mississippi State, well, then he's likely not going to be back next year. He probably would have gone pro after this year because he's already had one knee injury. If he puts together another good year at the college level, why would he stick around? Why would he not go pro? I guess you could say, well, there's Trevor Lawrence, there's Justin Fields. But again, if JT Daniels had the year that we think he could have had if he was healthy and we're in contention for a college football playoff spot and an SEC title berth, then like he might be up there in the conversation with the Fields and the Lawrences of the world. And so he goes pro, and then, yeah, you are left with either Stetson Bennett or Dwan Mathis or Carson Beck or a true freshman in Brock Vandegrift. So we're likely going to be in a much better situation going to next year, which is kind of what I said going back in the preseason, guys. Like I thought best case scenario for this team this year, next year, was for Jamie Newman to be good enough to win the job this year and then for Daniels to sit, learn, and get healthy, and then be ready to be the guy next year. And that way, you lead into Brock Vandegrift in 2022, and whoever it might be, Vandegrift, Beck, Mathis, whoever ends up staying with the transfer portal, you never really know. But it would be an open competition going into 2022, but those guys have another year under their belt, especially Vandegrift coming in as a true freshman next year. He would have a year to sit, learn, grow, develop all those things, and be ready to roll as a redshirt freshman. I thought that was best case scenario. And obviously, things did not work out with Jamie Newman. We know that. Don't even want to go there right now because it just makes me angry to think about. But the rest of that scenario is still very much in play with the idea that JT Daniels could still be around next year and could be that bridge to Vandegrift or whoever it is in 2022. So in that regard, it absolutely could be very much a blessing in disguise. Although I will say I would love to have had him healthy all year and be in contention for the SEC title still right now, even though I guess technically we're not mathematically limited, but we essentially are. I probably would have rather had JT Daniels, at least the version of JT that we saw against Mississippi State. I would love to have had him all year because I think we probably would be in the SEC title game, maybe even have won it and be in the college football playoff for the shot to win a national title. I really believe that. So that kind of sucks. But if he does come back next year, then I still think we're in really good shape moving forward. All right, moving on here. I've got another question about the quarterbacks. This is from Eric. Appreciate the question, Eric. Why are Georgia fans mad that they can't be mad at Kirby Smart anymore because JT Daniels wasn't healthy? So they are ignoring the facts to say Kirby is lying. All right, Kurt. So have you gotten that sense? Or do you feel like some Georgia fans are kind of upset now they can't be mad at Kirby anymore? Or are they just mad at Kirby because JT should have been playing all along?
Yeah, it's at this point, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't type situation with the fan base. Like, they were going to be mad if he came out there and didn't play well. Like, oh my God, this, like, now Kirby, he just can't recruit quarterbacks. Like, we're terrible. But if he plays well, like you're seeing, well, why hadn't he been playing? It was just, and the biggest thing is people have to realize, like, I thought a real big telltale sign was that interview with Dog Nation on Sunday by JT's father, who was very, very complimentative of Kirby and the athletic staff, who even himself admitted, hey, I went to the scrimmage, and JT was not himself. He couldn't push through the ball. His accuracy wasn't there. The things that make him the five-star and the athlete he is, he didn't have. And his dad even admitted that. But yet, the fan base, who doesn't even know the kid, can't admit it.
Yes. And Kirby, like, he was very – like one thing, like Kirby Smart, his press conference, he has two different kinds of press conferences. His press conferences during the week, like, he's always relatively open with a lot of things, but there's certain things, like, he'll be kind of, I don't want to say standoffish, but kind of gruff at times and won't answer questions about the quarterback, maybe to people's satisfaction. But if you get him in a post-game press conference after the emotions of the game where he's more emotional.
He will slip up and say stuff.
Yes, he will. He's much – it's a different Kirby Smart. He doesn't have that standoffish kind of attitude, that gruff demeanor, which I think is an act, by the way. I think he's trying to emulate Nick Saban in that regard. I think he's kind of basically setting the tone for the team. Like, hey, we're serious. But after the game, I think you see more of the real Kirby Smart, the guy that's more relatable, affable. He's more open, and you don't see that kind of gruffness about him. And he'll answer some questions. And I thought he answered some things more directly about the quarterback situation. It was more open about JT's recovery and situation than he had been previously, any time previously. I mean, he was talking about, like, we had him out there, and he was basically saying a lot of things that you and I have been saying, not just you and I, Kurt, but a lot of people have been saying for a while and kind of been speculating on. But he's basically like, we got him out there in the scrimmages, and the guy couldn't move. The guy just simply had a big, huge brace on and simply could not move when there's any pressure. And so we couldn't get the guy ready to play. Like, we that cannot be the guy that you're preparing to play week one if the guy cannot move in a scrimmage setting, which is the closest thing you get to a game setting. So I think, and then you, like you said, with the Dog Nation article with JT's dad, that kind of backs up what Kirby was saying. So yeah, and here I was thinking about this earlier today, actually. And this whole, like, and again, I do think that Kirby's kind of messed up the messaging a little bit. I think he should have been maybe a little bit more straightforward early on. But, like, I'm just going to speak from personal experience, like, the idea, because what people are, like, caught up on is the idea that after the Arkansas game, going to the Auburn game, what was it, the day after the Arkansas game, Kirby comes out and says JT Daniels is, quote, cleared. And everyone's assuming, and including you and I, we're like, oh, is JT Daniels going to be the guy? Because you hear cleared, and you're like, well, that means you can play. But there's a big difference with being cleared and ready to play. And this has been, I know this has been touched on all along, all throughout the year, but I'm just going to put this in, like, personal terms that kind of I've gone through. So, like, you guys, I've mentioned a couple of times here on the show that I like to run. I wouldn't call myself a runner, I guess. I'm not, like, a competitive runner. I run marathons. I train, do all that. I'm not, like, great at it, but it's something that's important to me. I work hard at it. And I've been doing this for a decade plus now. And I have dealt with my fair share of injuries. Not an ACL, thank God, knock on wood. But I have dealt with injuries, and it's extraordinarily frustrating. And so I kind of thought back to this. Like, so there have been times, like, through my rehab where eventually you get clear to go out and start running again. But when I get clear to go start running after an injury, whether it's my foot injury, knee injury, I've had all sorts of different kind of injuries. I basically, like, you start like a mile. And you can't run as far as you normally would. You can't run as fast as you normally would. You're not the same. And you have to steadily build yourself up. Like, a couple of years ago, the last major injury I had was in the early spring of 2019. I ran the Atlanta Marathon, and about halfway through, my knee was just done. It was anything crazy, nothing long term. It's kind of a chronic thing I've dealt with. It's my IT band that messes with my knee. And at about mile 16 or 17, it started to really, really bother me. But I wasn't going to quit. Wasn't going to give up. I limped to the finish line. I got there. But that was probably dumb. I should have totally stopped because that just made it way worse. So that was, I think, like the first week of March. And then I was out of commission, really not even able to consider start running again. I wasn't cleared to run until late May. And I was cleared to run. But again, once I got back running and I was cleared to start running, to begin that process, I would start out with a mile. And you do that for a week. And then you go to a mile and a half. And you do that for a week. Then you go to 2 miles. And you do that for a week. And that's running about 3 to 4 minutes slower than my normal mile pace. So eventually you get back to where you can run 7 or 8 miles at a time, but still 3 or 4 minutes slower than your typical mile pace. And then you start working in the speed after that. So for an injury that started in early March, I wasn't cleared to run until late May. But that's when I was cleared, right? Just like JT Daniels was cleared to play, I was cleared to run in late May, but I wasn't back to 100% really until about August. Once I was cleared, it took me about 2 months to get back to where I felt like I was close to my normal self. And so it just takes time. Like, I was cleared to run all along, but I wasn't myself. I wasn't ready. And I think that JT was, it was kind of experiencing a similar situation. It's what people do when you come off injuries. You might be cleared. That means you can start those activities and you can play, but you're not going to necessarily be able to play as well as you normally did. Like, I couldn't run as fast or as far as I normally did. And I had to keep steadily, week by week, work myself back up. I was 50%, then 75%, then 80, then 90. All eventually I got back to 100% where I was my normal self. And I don't even know if JT's back to 100% yet, but he's close enough now to where he can go out there and make an impact for us. So I love the question here, Eric, a little tongue in cheek, of course, but why are fans mad that they can't be mad at Kirby anymore? Well, it's kind of just human nature. If you think about it, guys, like, people, like, we're all different. We're all humans. And there's things that are different about us, but we all share certain things in common. And look, like, generally speaking, people like to complain. You guys know that. People like to tear down more than we build up. I think it's a way to kind of deal with frustration over things that are out of our control. And people tend to oftentimes, I'll probably include myself in this, I think most people at some point in your life think you know more than other people. And so you put all that together, and it's just human nature to be mad about the coaching staff and their decisions, no matter what they do. Like you said, Kurt, damned if you do, damned if you don't. And that's just kind of part of the job. So I guess that's why you get paid $6-7 million a year.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know ya at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know,
trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, moving on here. Let's get away from the quarterbacks for a couple minutes here. We've got a question from Nathan. Along with this, can we get a breakdown of what you saw from the cover eight, which is essentially what we were running against Mississippi State? It seems the linebackers were dropping really far back in coverage. Curse, we touched on this a little bit in the recap show. Do you agree with Nathan there?
Yeah, I do agree. You know, I mentioned that, like, I understood the running of the zone against a team by Mississippi State, but I personally did not like how deep our linebackers were dropping. I thought they were dropping a little bit too extreme, to the point that we couldn't even get to their guys until they were 5 or 6 yards already up. And it was just hard to make something happen when you're doing that. And so that's why I mentioned that I was just not a fan of how deep our linebackers are dropping, because it's just we have athletic linebackers, but you can only be so fast. And if you notice, it felt like towards the end of the third quarter and then going into the fourth, when we start getting defensive stops, that we were playing a tighter zone in general.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, we touched on this a little bit in the recap show, but it doesn't hurt to talk about it again. Yeah, I agree with everything you said there, Curtis. I think the rush three drop eight strategy, that scheme was the correct scheme, because that's what everyone else has used to great effect against Mississippi State all year long. They played better. They executed better offensively. The quarterback's improved. He's a freshman. He's gotten better. They didn't turn the ball over like they had. They didn't drop balls like they had been doing. They didn't have stupid penalties like they had been doing for the most part. But I think that was the right strategy. But I do think that the zone was a little too soft. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more maybe pattern matching type stuff, which is basically, again, it's where it's the best of both worlds. It's kind of like matchup zone in basketball, if you're more familiar with that, where you're playing zone defense. You have an area you're covering, but anyone who comes into your area, you match up on them like you're playing man coverage. It's kind of the best of both worlds. And Kirby has a background doing that with Nick Saban at Alabama. Really, that was kind of what their early defense at Alabama were based off of. They've kind of gotten away from that over the years. But I was surprised we didn't see maybe a little bit more of that. I don't think going to man coverage would have been any more successful, because we saw what happened when we went to man coverage. We got, a 51-yard touchdown. Mark Webb got burned there. And that, again, that's what Mississippi State wanted you to be in. They want to bait you and get you into that coverage that they want, that they can hit those vertical shots on the field, get those big explosive plays. And we did not want to allow them to do that. So we were willing to give them that. I just think we gave them maybe a little too much. I do think that we were a little too soft in the zone. But again, that's part of the difficulty in facing a Mississippi State offense, or at least a Mike Leach coached offense with that air raid, because they force you to play a scheme that you are not comfortable with. That's not what we do on a game in, game out basis.
Well, I also think that our coaches were a little bit too trying to be protective after getting burned so bad on the wheel route against Florida.
I think that's very fair. I think that's a big reason why that we didn't want to use as much man, because how did Florida get so open on those wheel routes? Well, they were using rub routes, right? And Mike Leach's offense, like Mike Leach, guys, is one of the forerunners, one of the godfathers of the modern pick play with mesh, which is their defining play in that scheme. So of course we saw what happened with Florida. We're like, well, we're not going to put our guys in a position to have that happen again. And I think that really played a factor into it, no doubt, Kurt. Absolutely. All right, moving on here, Curtis. Jamil has a good question. How would you grade each position coach through these seven games plus Kirby? So, Curtis, this is interesting. We did like our midseason report card where we graded the players, but this is a coaching perspective here. How would you grade each position coach through these seven games? So let's just start with the headman. Let's start with Kirby.
I may go with a C+.
Okay. I'm gonna go with, you know, I think Kirby's done a good job. I
think he has done a good job. I think I'm kind of putting a little bit of the blame on the defense also on him, because while I do believe it's Dan Lanning's defense, you know, Kirby can still have his input because they run his system.
Yeah, there's no doubt there. I'm gonna go with Kirby. I'm gonna go with B. Obviously, this has not been our banner years, our worst year in a couple of years since 2006, since his first year. But, and I know people want to blame him for the quarterback situation. I really believe he was more so the victim of circumstance than the first part of the season. Now, after the Alabama game, I put that on Kirby Smart, not going with JT, especially the Florida game. Like JT Daniels, I don't understand. Like it's tough for me to accept any sort of argument that JT Daniels should not have at least been the first guy off the bench. If he wasn't going to start the game, why was Dwan Mathis coming in instead of JT Daniels? If Daniels is ready, like 3 days later, he's ready to be your starter in preparation for Missouri. So that I do have an issue with, because that, I mean, potentially could have cost us the Florida game. Now, there were other issues in that game, certainly had injuries, and defensively, we got burned in that game. There's no doubt there. But I think overall, he's done a good, solid job. I mean, we're 5-2, guys. I mean, it's not where we want to be, but I don't think he's like failed miserably.
Especially when you take in all the injuries and things we've had at times. I mean, Alabama game, yes, that one sucked overall. But the Florida game, while we did play like crap and offensively, we were defensively at a disadvantage.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely. So yeah, I'm gonna go B there. All right, what about let's go Charlton Warren in the secondary, Kurt.
I'd probably go with a B-.
Okay, I wouldn't argue with that too much.
I think a lot of it has dealt with, you know, just some of the bad play, I mean, by Tyreek Stevenson and people like that. But also, I think a B- B is solid for him.
Yeah, I have him at a. I'm just going to go straight with a B here. I think. Look, I know there's two high profile games where our secondary got torched. Alabama and Florida, two of the best offenses we faced. But at some point, like, it's not necessarily on the coach when you have the guys largely, at least in the Alabama game, guys were in position to make plays. It was very rare that guys were just running wide open where we had busts in that game. It really wasn't so much about busts. Guys just got beat in that game. And sometimes that happens when you have a really good quarterback, elite wide receivers, great offensive coordinator, great scheme. It's just tough. Now, in the Florida game, we had some guys that had their eyes in the backfield and had really poor eye discipline, weren't covering anyone at times. Mark Webb, for example, on one of the touchdowns, not being able to get out of off the pick plays, off the rub routes. Well, some of that was the linebackers as well. Actually, more of that was linebackers than anything. So there were some issues there. I think some of that was more so coaching than I think the Alabama game was. But all in all, I think we've been pretty good in the secondary. We've been fine. We've been good enough. So I'm going to give him a B. Not great, not terrible, pretty solid. What about outside linebackers, Dan Lanning?
I'm going with a C for Lanning. I think a lot of that has to do with the defensive coordinator also. But just at times being too stubborn with the defense. You and I have questioned our defensive scheme, especially going back to Alabama, the way we just stuck with it. And even a Mississippi State game, like, I didn't like the deep zone that we were playing. And I think a lot of that goes on him because Kirby has given him a lot of freedom, it feels like. Kirby has input. But if you watch it, Kirby's not as active on the sidelines defensively as he was, say, under Mel Tucker and people like that. So that's why I'm going to put a lot more of this on Dan Lanning overall.
That's fair. I think, a B. I think our defense has been – we were really good early in the year. Our two biggest games against the two best offenses that we faced, we weren't good enough. And some of that was just their players were better than ours at times. So some of it was certainly scheme. And we'll talk more about – I don't want to go into too much detail on that because we have more questions about that later on. So we'll get into that then. A solid B. What about inside linebackers, Glenn Schumann?
I'm going to go with a B. I think he's done well with what we've had. I mean, Monty has not been healthy. I think he's done – outside of Quay Walker, who sometimes lacks instincts, I think our inside linebackers have played pretty well.
I think our inside linebackers have played really well. So I'm actually going to go with an A. I think they played really well.
I think
well.
That's fair because one thing we heard earlier in the season was that our guy – that Schumann can't develop guys. And I have to say after seeing what I've seen, especially with N'Kobe and Monty, the steps Monty has taken to become who he is, I think Schumann has done a great job.
Yeah, I think she's been a great inside linebacker coach. And yeah, I know the Florida game was an issue at times, defending the running backs out of the backfield with the rub routes. But guys, it's tough. That's why I always say, that's what I've been saying all year now, at least since the Alabama game, that defense doesn't win championships anymore. Because some of those plays were not legal. But a rub route is legal. And it's very, very tough to defend. It's very the rules are just set up to allow offenses to run wild. It's not set up for defenses to win championships anymore. You need enough defense. But you also have to be good on offense with the way the rules are set up now. And I don't know how much you can put that on him. Some, sure, there's some guys, poor eye discipline, absolutely, here and there. But I think all in all, if you look at the season in totality, I think our inside linebackers have played really well. What about defensive line, Trey Scott?
I'm going to give him a B+. Before the injuries, our defensive line was absolutely dominant. He almost had an A-, really.
I'm going with an A for the defensive line.
I think that's fair. I'm probably going to switch to an A- because – even with all these injuries, you lose two of your starting D tackles. I thought they've held up pretty well.
I really think they play lights out. And if Jordan Davis, I'd love for him to come back, but I don't think that's realistic right now. But if he can get drafted pretty high, that's going to – I think Trey Scott's been recruiting a lot better than he was early in his tenure here, which he got a lot of heat for.
Yeah, but because I thought Kerryon Ingram Dawkins is going to be a monster when he gets here, similar to the Jordan Davis path.
Yeah, the 247 updated rankings is just their rankings, not the composite, but their updated rankings. I think he's inside the top 25 now.
I think he's number 20 overall, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's definitely moved up. But Trey Scott needed to have guys that got drafted high to show guys, hey, look, I can develop you. And if Jordan Davis is that guy, that's going to be even better for him. He's already recruiting better as it is. So I'm going to go with an A there. Wide receivers, Cortez Hankton.
I'm going to give him a B-. The thing is that he looks like a heck of a lot better coach, recruiter, whatever you want to call him. When all of a sudden we have a great quarter, a competent quarterback to get them the ball.
Sure, absolutely. I think he was working with a lot of really young, especially Jermaine Burton started.
Yeah, Burton. You see the way Burton has developed just this quickly, and like I've mentioned, a lot of it had to do playing time without competent quarterbacks, and yet he's developed into what he has now. The guy's a game changer, and so I think he's done a lot of it too with injuries and what just the hands we've been dealt with George being injured and the quarterback play and all this. So I think he's done pretty well. I mean, they haven't blocked as well as they have in the past. I think that's the one area that they haven't done as well overall. But I still think he's done a good job.
Cool. I'm with you. I'm going to go B-plus with him. And Carl, we're going to go rapid fire through the last three here so we can get to more questions. Dell McGee, running backs?
B-minus.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I got B-minus. I mean, running backs have been good, solid, but certainly there's been a pretty noticeable drop-off from where we've been at running back the past couple of years. I think that's fair to say. Matt Luke, offensive line?
C-plus. Or, I mean, actually, I'll go C-plus. Yeah, I would have said B-minus, B, if we just hadn't had this last bad game.
Yeah, this last game was terrible. I mean, that does certainly sour things right
bad
now.
Taste but... in my mouth, because he had done a good job of bringing some balance and cohesion to the line after the way it started. But the way we struggled last game was just a little ridiculous. So
yeah, we're kind of booking it right now. The first game and this last game against Mississippi State were two terrible games. Everything in the middle has been really good, actually. They were becoming a strength. But we've got a lot of new guys in different spots. I know we got Ben Cleveland.
And some of the guys have been struggling aren't the new ones like Schaefer and them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go with a B. I think he's done a solid job. First year on the job with a bunch of new guys. And finally, Todd Monken, quarterback coach, last offensive coordinator.
I actually give him a B-plus because, we haven't always executed, but I have been open that I think he has called some beautiful games. While he should run some more, in general, he's done a great job of getting guys open.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go with an A.
Begging. Yeah.
I'm going to go with an A. I think he's done an incredible job scheming this offense with quarterback limitations. And you can knock him for the quarterbacks and whatnot. But, like, again, I think just like Kirby, in a lot of ways, victim of circumstance here. I think, you know, if you look at what we have from an offensive scheme standpoint compared to where we were last year, I mean, it's night and day. And I think he's the answer, offensive coordinator. We should have to find that answer at quarterback. And hopefully JT's that guy. And we'll see how things transpire moving forward. All right, moving on here, got a question from Jay-Z Daniel. See what he did there? He says, we do not look good without LeCount and Davis. Should we be ready for a huge letdown on defense next year? The defensive backs are nothing to write home about, but losing Stokes, Campbell, Webb, Daniel, as well as LeCount cannot be good for us. They haven't looked great, so I can't imagine the replacements are anything to look forward to since we haven't seen Ringo or Kimber at all. Kurt, are you sharing those concerns?
I mean, of course, you'd be a little concerned because one thing that's helped us this year has been our experience in the backfield and things like that. But the thing is, like, Jordan Davis was good his freshman year, but he's really started taking off these last 2 years. So give someone like Jalen Carter a chance to get some more experience going. I mean, the guy has held his own while not having he hasn't been in the system as long, gotten to take advantage of the weight room, all those things. So I think Jalen Carter can hold up. I think Warren Brinson's going to be really good next year. So, I mean, I understand it, but I still think we have a lot of guys that can take steps and do things next year that'll make our defense still really good. And then, I mean, they're young guys. Keelan Ringo's out for the entire year, so there's nothing you can do about that. But I still think he's more skilled than he's probably the most athletic guy in our defensive backfield as a freshman right now, pure athletic-wise. And as good as our, you know, experience as our cornerbacks and stuff have been, they've been beat too. So it's not like that experience doesn't get you beat. So, I mean, the guys we're going to replace them with are good in their own right.
Experience is great, but I've always said, if I had to choose between talent and experience, give me talent all day long.
I mean, Richard too. Richard did not become who he was. He didn't really start taking these steps till last year. Even his sophomore year when he started playing, he was not the guy he is now. So I think that you just got to give these guys a chance to get in there and earn more PT.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, defensive depth or defensive back.
You'll have Seen back next year. My guess is you'll have someone like Major Burns being your starter. And I thought he came in and held his own for the most part against Florida in a situation where he probably wasn't ready to play. And at cornerback, it'll be a learning curve. But if I have trust in anyone to get our guys ready, it is Kirby.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, defensive back depth, I'd be lying if I said it's not going to be a concern. It will be a concern. I think
We also got to remember we have, I think the big pickup recruiting wise is DeJuan Warren.
DeJuan Warren is going to be an instant impact player for us. I think he's better than DJ.
Yeah, that's what we need. Someone like last year, I think Warren's better. Someone like that who can match up with the young guy and he can be your dominant guy while the young guy develops is a huge thing that we just haven't talked about.
Yeah, I think DeJuan Warren is going to be an impact type guy, like immediate impact type guy. I think he, based on what I saw from him and DJ Daniel at the JUCO level, I think Warren is further along than what Daniel was. I think he's more explosive.
I think he's a better athlete too, bigger, stronger.
Yeah, no doubt. But defensive back depth is going to be a concern. I'd be lying if I said that it wasn't. But I do like the talent we have there. You mentioned Kelee Ringo. I know we didn't see him at all this year, but the guy can play. Jalen Kimber, it has a lot of potential. We didn't see him. We haven't seen him at all this year, at cornerback. But he's a guy that has great speed, has the upside that you look for at that position. You mentioned DeJuan Warren. There's some options there. Tyree Stevenson might factor in at cornerback. We'll see. I don't know. I like him better kind of at the star position. He's a little thicker, can defend against the run. But I think a big important thing is to see what happens with Tyson Campbell. I know the odds are he probably goes pro, but I don't know. He's in two high-profile games, he hasn't played well. So there's a chance he comes back. Now, if he goes and he goes to the NFL Combine, he's going to test off the charts. So he'll probably go, but I don't know if that's a done deal yet. Maybe. Who knows? We'll see. So that would be a huge benefit for this team. I know he hasn't played well consistently this year, but he's still growing, still learning. I think he has an extraordinarily high upside. And the front seven is going to be very good, guys. There might be some questions in the back end, but the front seven is going to be very good. I know there's a void with no Jordan Davis. We don't have anyone that's going to be Jordan Davis, and he has been a key part to our defense, our rush defense in particular. When our defense is built around stopping the run first, he's been a key part of that. But I like what I've seen from some of these young guys, whether it's Brinson Logue has really impressed me. We're going to miss a guy like Devontae White. We're going to miss Devontae White. We have a lot of good young players. You mentioned Jalen Carter. I mean, Jalen Carter is going to be a beast for us, okay? And Tyrion Ingram Dawkins coming in next year. He's got to continue to improve his body. He's still growing. I don't know if I count him to be an impact player in year one, but I think we have a lot of good players on the defensive line that are young and ready to play. Bill Norton's another guy. So there's Trevon Walker. There's guys there. Inside linebacker, I know we're going to lose Monty, but you got N'Kobe Dean, Quay Walker, Chain Tindall coming back, Ryan Davis coming off the injury. Treston Marshall just had shoulder surgery, but he'll be coming back. So there are some players in that front set I think will be really, really good. Not to mention guys like Nolan Smith and Aziz probably goes pro, but we'll see. Hopefully Adam Anderson's back.
I think Jermaine
takes it to our next question, Curtis.
Come back.
Yeah, Jermaine might come back. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But that takes us to our next question, Curtis. This is from Brett. Why doesn't Adam Anderson get more playing time? He seems to make an impact every time he's in the game, which is more than you can say for Nolan Smith, shots fired, who gets far more playing time than Anderson. Kurt, is that something that's frustrated you throughout this season?
Maybe it's situational, but it just plain and simple comes down to the fact that he's not thick enough. He's not a three-down linebacker right now, and when you're playing certain teams, it's hard to get him in there when they're not three-down guys. I mean, you saw DeAndre Walker. We knew he was better than Davin Bellamy for the most part, but he couldn't keep the weight on, so you couldn't put him out there in every situation because he's not going to be able to hold the edge. You saw with Leonard Floyd, that was his biggest weakness. He couldn't hold the edge. He was getting killed against Florida that when they rushed over 300 yards against us, and that's what would happen if you put Adam Anderson out there consistently to try to stop the run. Now, Nolan does a good job of stopping the run and setting the edge right now, and we haven't really unleashed him as much in the pass rush, but he does what he's supposed to do in holding the edge, which is sometimes a thankless job.
Yeah, absolutely. If you look at the snap breakdown here, so Adam Anderson has 89 snaps on the year. Only had three against Alabama, which I do think is ridiculous. Now,
yeah,
Alabama,
there are times I wish we used him more like against Alabama and things, but overall it's hard to get him like 70% of the snaps because he just can't do it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And Alabama, like, it was frustrating for him not being in the game more, but it's also partly what they were doing. Actually, a big part of what they were doing. They were running a lot of 12 personnel in that game with one running back, two tight ends. So we had to respond with our heavy personnel. That's one of the things that they really used to hurt us in that game, is that we didn't have all of our athletes on the field consistently. And they knew that that's what we wanted to do. We wanted to have those guys on the field in our nickel package, our dime package. And they wanted to keep us from doing that. So basically, they just didn't allow us to get Anderson on the field. Because when they were running the balls, you're right, Curtis, Adam Anderson at 225 pounds simply cannot consistently hold up against the run. He's a third down pass rush specialist. He's very, very good at that. But if we can't get teams to those situations, then we can't use him. And Nolan has played more, 134 snaps on the year. But Nolan's snaps have gone down the past 3 weeks. He had first game, 22 snaps, then 34, 14 against Tennessee, 26 against Alabama, 17 against Kentucky, 9 against Florida, 12 against Mississippi State. Aziz has 280 snaps in the year, and now that Jermaine Johnson's back, he's got 132. Those are our two primary guys in that spot when Nolan come in, kind of dispel them at times. But Adam Anderson is a pass rush specialist. He's a specialist player right now. And you're exactly right, Curtis. It's the weight. And you mentioned DeAndre Walker. That's the perfect comparison here. DeAndre Walker, guys, came into Athens. His first year here was 212 pounds. In 2015, he was 212 pounds when he got on campus. I was watching a 707 camp, and I saw him as a true freshman come in the stadium. I was like, Jesus Christ, like I'm thicker than this guy. He left at 245 pounds. Adam Anderson right now, he came in at 214 pounds. He's 225 right now, guys. He's got to add more weight. And maybe he can't with that frame. I don't know. Some guys just have trouble doing that. Walker had trouble. He was finally able to do it, but maybe Anderson's not going to be able to do that. But if he does add more weight in, where he can hold up against the run more consistently and set the edge, he can be more of a three-down player. And I know he gets frustrated because he wants to be on the field, and I want to be on the field too because he does make an impact when he's on the field. But you've also got to be able to stop the run. And, and sometimes I do think we put too much of an emphasis on stopping the run. But the fact is, if you have a guy that's 225 pounds that they're trying to set the edge with a guy that's, you know, a 300-pound offensive lineman, you're not going to win those battles consistently, guys. You're just not. And the other guys are just bigger than him.
I feel like people would be more mad, too, if we kept him out there and he keeps getting killed trying to stop the run.
It just goes back to what you said, damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Like, I mean, these coaches are paid to make these decisions. And it's frustrating that Anderson can't add more weight. I want him to because I want him to be on the field more. I do think he's the best pass rusher on the team by a pretty wide margin. I know Aziz is good too. Anderson's just a more explosive pass rusher, but he's not the total package right now. He's got to be able to add weight. Until he does, he's not going to see the field as much as he wants to, as much as all of us want him to. All right, Kirk, we've got about 5 minutes left. We're going to try to go rapid fire through some of these questions here. Sam asks, do you think we would have won the Alabama and Florida games if JT Daniels started those games? Kirk, what do you think?
It's hard to tell. I mean, I think Alabama, we probably have a better chance of winning because we're at full strength on defense. Florida, it's hard to tell just because, I mean, as you saw, it didn't matter what our offense was doing. Our defense was just that bad also.
Well, I mean, Florida's done that to every team. Like A&M, the way A&M beat them is they just outscored Florida. So we had to find a way to outscore them. And with JT Daniels, I think we would have had a shot. I think we would have had a shot. You can't guarantee those things. I think there's a real shot. Like I said in the recap show, let's not forget, guys, we were one Mark Webb drop pick six away from being down by a touchdown in the fourth quarter in that game. If JT Daniels is in there, I think we have a shot in that game. I'm not saying it's a done deal, but it would have been a shootout because they would have still scored on us. But I think he would have certainly given us much more of a chance than Stetson or Duane Mathis did.
Oh, yeah, I'm not going to argue with that. I definitely believe that. I just don't know if we would have had the guys to make the stops.
Sure, that's a fair way to look at it. Alabama, I think we win that game. Because we all know, guys, we were winning that game for 2.5 quarters. And then our quarterback started to falter down the stretch and was missing wide open guys, not seeing guys that were open, getting balls batted down. And I don't want to say he lost us the game. He was a major factor in us losing that game.
The game flipped because the defense was going to give up plays against Alabama. They're that good, and we just didn't answer.
Of course. Now, the caveat about the Alabama game is I don't know if JT Daniels – if he would have played that game, was he the same version of himself from a health standpoint that he was against Mississippi State? I think there's a good chance the answer is probably no. Now, if it was the version of JT we saw against Mississippi State, then yes, we would have been in Alabama. But there's no way to know if he was that version of himself. That far along in his recovery? So that one, it's tough for me to say. I will say, yeah, if he was the JT we saw against Mississippi State, we win that game. But there's a chance he wasn't far enough along in his recovery to be that guy. So I want to give Kirby and the coaching staff a little bit of the doubt on that one. But yeah, if he was healthy in both those games, I think we were undefeated right now. I do. And that gives me hope for next year, which is kind of where we are right now. All right. Josh, our great friend Josh asked, what is Trey Hill's issue? He doesn't seem to be progressing the way we expected, and his play sometimes resembles an underclassman. He doesn't look stronger or more confident. He reminds me of Mark Richt era lineman. Kurt, what is going on with Trey Hill?
I don't know. At times it just feels like he's flat out lazy. Like if you're watching the game, he didn't have any snaps over the guy's head, thankfully, but he still just can't get his snaps down and throws off the timing. If you watch it, there's a lot of offensive running plays where the timing is just thrown off by his snap that just, he can't figure out how to make it work. And it's frustrating overall. And then sometimes when he tries to make his snap work, he focuses so much on the snap that he gets blown off the ball by the defensive lineman. So he's just one of these that it's either one thing or the other, but he is just absolutely struggling. And I have questioned it since the beginning that I've never truly thought he was a center. And I definitely will say I am excited and hopeful to see what someone like Cedric Van Pran can do in the future, because I think that's your future center.
It's very interesting. With Ben Cleveland moving on next year, Schaefer moving on, maybe you see Trey Hill slide to one of the guard positions or get past the ball together. I think Cedric Van Pran's going to be a really good player for us. Because everything I've heard, everything I've seen from him, I'm really excited about what he can do moving forward. Trey Hill, you mentioned the snapping issue, so I'm with you on that. That's unacceptable. It's just been far too consistent.
Especially from a blocking standpoint, no longer an underclassman.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And from a blocking standpoint, like he's good at times, but there's times where he just falls off defenders. It kind of reminds me of Cade Mays at times where he just like kind of falls off defenders, doesn't stick on his blocks. And that's hard to explain. It's hard to explain, but he hasn't made this taking the steps that we need him to take. But hopefully he follows kind of the Lamont Gilliard trajectory where he has a really big senior year. I hope that's the case. I'm rooting for the guy.
I think he comes back. He's someone that I wouldn't be shocked to see go pro.
I don't – I mean, maybe. Is he – you think anyone would draft him? I don't know.
I don't know, but, I mean, there's a lot of kids you say that about when they decide to go pro, and yet they still do it.
True. All right, Kirk, got about a minute and a half here. Last question is from Wesley. On a scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that Todd Monken stays at Georgia after this season?
I'm going to say an 8. Unless he gets a head job, I don't see him going, especially the way his contract is set up. It's hard for him to leave after this first year.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think I would say a scale. I'm going to say a 9. I just don't believe in sure things. Like, you never say never, right? I don't like to speak in absolutes. But I'm confident he'll be back next year. I think he's done a good job here. I think look at the raw materials, just as we laid out earlier, Kurt, you were talking about this. Look at what he has coming back next year. Potentially, you've got your starting quarterback in JT Daniels now. You feel comfortable about that. You can build some momentum with him the rest of this year. You have a couple really good wide receivers. I haven't really seen Arian Smith yet. Dominic Blaylock should be back next year. You have a lot of returning players in the offensive line. You have more guys coming in this year. You got Zeus maybe coming back, maybe James Cook, but at the very least, Kendall Milton, Kenny McIntosh. Like, you have some weapons coming back. Do you want to start all over? Georgia's a great place. You're going to consistently be able to recruit the top players in the country. And you're going to be competing for national championships each and every year. You're going to be at least be in the conversation, have a chance to do
well,
that.
Well, not so only that, but you got your future quarterback in Brock Vandegrift. Like, you've got a pretty daggone good setup, and you're able to recruit like at a level you've never been able had the resources that he's ever had.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased. I think this is the place he needs to be. I don't know why you would want to leave, but you can never say never. These guys, you know, they have relationships, they have contacts, they have different priorities. There are relationship dynamics at play there, although everything that I hear is that him and Kirby get along very well. But I do think, I'm not going to sit here and say that Tom Monken's here for the long haul, but next year, yeah, I do think he'll be back next year for all the reasons that we laid out. You have a really good, strong core of returning talent coming back next year. You have hopefully maybe your quarterback of the future coming in as well in Brock Vandegrift. You have JT Daniels hopefully coming back for another year where he's hopefully going to be healthy finally once and for all. You're going to consistently be able to recruit as well as anyone in the country. You have all the resources available to you. So I think next year, yeah, Todd Monken will be back. And I think we're going to set ourselves up nicely to make a little bit of a run next year. I really do believe that. But all right, guys, that's all we have time for today here on the Glory UGA podcast. I know we did not get to every question. We're going to try to work in the ones that we did not get to later on this week. I promise we'll do our best to try to make that happen. But thanks for listening, guys. Thanks for sending in your questions. We always appreciate that. We love the interaction. But for Curtis, I'm Tyler. And as always, go Dawgs.